Chapter 14. The Settlement. At the end of the week, Nate left the city. He was exhausted from 9 days of questioning the Phelan heirs. He felt ashamed. He pitied the Phelan children. He felt sorry for Sneed, a sad little man who just wanted to survive. 2 days later, Nate arrived in Salem, where his kids from his second marriage lived with their mother, Christy, and her new husband, Theo. The last time he saw them, Nate was drunk and fought with his ex-wife in the front yard while the children watched. Theo had threatened him with a shovel. Nate later woke up in his car in the parking lot of a McDonald's with 6 empty beer cans on the seat beside him. He called Christy 4 hours before he arrived at their home. "Christy, it's me, Nate," he said. "I'm in Oregon. I'd like to see the kids. Maybe tonight, tomorrow?"
"Well, sure, Nate. I guess we can work something out. But the kids are very busy, you know. School, dance class, soccer."
"How are they?"
"They're doing very well. We love Oregon."
They agreed to have dinner the following night. That gave her enough time to prepare the kids. Theo decided to work late. Nate kissed Angela. Austin just shook hands. Christy stayed in her bedroom for an hour while their father got to know his children again. Dinner lasted an hour. At 7 o'clock, Nate said he had to go.
"I have a soccer game tomorrow, Dad," Austin said,
and Nate's heart almost stopped. He couldn't remember the last time he'd been called Dad.
"It's at the school," Angela said. "Could you come?"
Nate didn't know what to say. Christy settled the issue.
"I'll be there. We could talk," she said.
"Of course I'll come," he said. The children kissed him. Driving away, Nate suspected Christy wanted to see him 2 days in a row to examine his eyes. She knew the signs. Nate stayed in Salem for 3 days. He watched his son play soccer and was full of pride. He was invited back to dinner, but agreed to come only if Theo joined them. He had lunch with Angela and her friends at school. He left Salem with a broken heart. How could a man lose such a wonderful family? He remembered almost nothing about the kids when they were smaller. No school plays, Christmas mornings, trips to the mall. Now they were almost grown, and another man was raising them. While Nate drove through Montana, Hark Geddes sent more papers to the court. There was no word from Rachel Lane. She obviously had no interest in the lawsuit. Didn't she want the money? It was a crazy idea, but why hadn't she appeared in court? The heirs couldn't win. They had to find a reason to settle. Rachel Lane's lack of interest was a very good reason. Daniel, his oldest child, met Nate in a bar near the university. He was waiting with a girl. Both were smoking and had bottles in front of them.
"This is Steph," Daniel said. "She's a model."
The first thing Nate noticed about Steph was her gray lipstick, applied heavily to her thick lips. She was certainly thin enough to be a model. Nate disliked her immediately.
"You want a beer?" Daniel asked.
"No, just water," Nate said. Daniel shouted at the waiter. "How's school?" Nate asked.
"I dropped out."
Daniel was angry and tense. The girl was there for 2 reasons. She would prevent hasty words and a fight. Nate suspected that his son had no money, that he wanted to punish his father for lack of support. He was afraid, though, because Nate was weak and might start to slide again. Steph would keep a hold on his anger and his language. The second reason was to make the meeting as short as possible. "Why did you drop out of school?" Nate asked.
"It was boring."
"He ran out of money," Steph said helpfully.
Nate wanted to pull out his checkbook and solve the kids' problems. That's what he'd always done. But now Daniel was 23, and it was time for him to sink or swim on his own.
"It's good for you," Nate said. "Work for a while. It'll make you appreciate school."
After four drinks, Steph was drunk, and Daniel and Nate had nothing else to say. He wrote down his phone number at St. Michael's and gave it to Daniel.
"This is where I'll be for the next couple of months. Call me if you need me."
"See you," Daniel said. "Take care."
2 days later, he was in Pittsburgh for his third and final meeting with his children. It didn't happen. He'd spoken twice to Caitlin, and the details were clear. She said she'd meet him for dinner at 7:30 at the restaurant in his hotel. She called him at 8:30 and said that a friend had been involved in an accident. She was at the hospital. Nate suggested that they have lunch the following day. Caitlin said that she couldn't. Her friend had a head injury, and she planned to stay with her until she was stable. She couldn't see Nate. She couldn't leave the hospital. Did she hate him so much? In a lonely hotel room in a city where he knew no one, it was easy to pity himself. He grabbed the phone and got busy. He called Phil to check on things at St. Michael's. He called Sergio. He felt surprisingly under control. His hotel room had a minibar, and he hadn't been near it. He called Josh.
"You need to come home, Nate," Josh said. "I have a plan."
Nate wasn't invited to the peace talks. Josh wanted to gain the trust of the Phelan lawyers. His plan was to meet with Hark and the others, then with Nate, until they struck a deal. The Phelan lawyers dreamed of a quick settlement. They believed they would become millionaires. Josh began by giving his opinion that the lawyers couldn't win their lawsuit. Troy Phelan's will was legal. Phelan's children and ex-wives had carefully chosen the three psychiatrists. He talked about Rachel Lane, as if he'd known her for years. She was a wonderful lady who lived a very simple life in another country. She didn't understand legal matters and didn't want to fight. And she'd been closer to Troy than most people knew.
"What does Rachel Lane plan to do with the money?" one of the lawyers asked.
"I'm not sure," Josh said, as if he and Rachel discussed it every day. "She'll probably keep a little and give most of it to charity. In my opinion, that's what Troy wanted. He knew that if your clients got the money, it wouldn't last 90 days. By leaving it to Rachel, he knew it would be passed on to people in need."
"We can take this lawsuit to the highest courts," Langhorne said. "Does she realize this could take years?"
"She does," Josh said. "That's why she would like to discuss settlement possibilities."
"Where do we start?" asked Wally Bright.
For a long time, they talked numbers.
Then Josh said, "Nate O'Reilly has contacted his client. She will offer each of the six heirs $10 million. The lawyers made rapid calculations. Hark had three clients. 17.5% gave him a fee of $5.25 million. Wally Bright would collect $5 million from his contract with Libigale and Spike. The other lawyers would collect $2 million. Wally spoke first.
"My client will settle for no less than $50 million.
The others shook their heads too and tried to look disgusted at Josh's offer. They talked about numbers for a while. Then Josh said,
"Rachel Lane is not a greedy woman. I think she might settle at $20 million per heir."
The lawyer's fees doubled, over $10 million for Hark alone. Poor Wally at $10 million now suddenly felt sick and asked to leave the meeting.
Nate was helping Father Phil when the phone rang. It was Josh.
"It couldn't have gone better. I stopped at $20 million. They want 50.
"50? Nate said in disbelief.
"Yes, but they're already spending the money. I bet two of them are at the Mercedes garage right now. We should complete the deal on Wednesday."
"I can't wait," Nate said. "Time for a coffee break."
We meet the judge on Wednesday, Nate told Phil. Then I'm going back to the Pantanal to tell Rachel what's happened.
Are you excited?
I don't know. I want to see her, but I'm not sure she wants to see me. She's very happy, and she doesn't want any part of this world.
Then why do it?
Because if she rejects the money again, the other side gets everything.
But you've already said that Rachel won't take the money. She's not going to change her mind, Phil said.
No, never. So the trip down is a waste of time.
I'm afraid so.
But at least we'll try.
All the Phelanaires were in the courtroom, except for Ramble. Judge Wycliffe explained that the purpose of the meeting was to explore a settlement. He made it clear that he didn't think the Phelan lawyers had much of a case. He asked Josh to tell him about the earlier settlement meeting on Monday.
I want to know exactly where we are, he said.
Josh was brief. The heirs wanted $50 million each. Rachel was offering $20 million to settle.
Nate was bored.
It would be fun to stand up and tell them that Rachel wasn't offering any money to settle and run out of the room. They would sit in shock for a few seconds. Then they would chase him like hungry dogs. When Josh finished, Hark began to speak. He talked about the Phelan children and their problems, admitting that they were rich and spoiled. Their father didn't care for them, and they hadn't learned the normal lessons children learn from their parents. They made many mistakes when they received $5 million on their 21st birthdays. Now they knew better. Hark spoke well, and when he sat down, the room was silent. The lawyers thought Nate controlled the money. He could fight them for an hour or two, try to offer less than the $50 million, but he wasn't in the mood.
My client will agree to $50 million, he said.
Well then, Wycliffe asked. Do we have a deal?
Out of habit, the Phelan lawyers put their heads together. They grouped around Hark and tried to whisper, but words failed them.
It's a deal, Hark announced, $26 million richer.
Rachel had to sign and approve the settlement. Nate said that it would take a few days for him to get the signature.